We're jumping back into part two of our spine deep dive series. And for those of you who didn't tune in last week, this is a new mini series format that I'll be doing occasionally on the podcast. In these deep dives, we'll be discussing one topic in depth and spreading it out over a few episodes. This is so I can deliver the information to you clearly and concisely. It makes more complex topics easier to understand and a little more exciting. But mostly, I like breaking up these episodes because I want you to be able to walk away with some piece or tidbit of information or even an insight that you can take with you and use personally to apply into your own life. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Modern Body Podcast. I'm your host, Ali DeRoma. And if you're new to this podcast, which I'm assuming many people are because it's fairly new, here's what you're going to find in each episode. We'll be looking at the essential role moving our body plays in our modern day lives, from the physical to the mental. We'll be uncovering the truths from the trends that are floating around in the fitness industry and the wellness space, and how we can use movement to support our body in any season of life, as well as the practical and realistic ways we can bring movement into our lives on a daily basis without stressing about it. Today in part two of our spine deep dive mini series, we're going to be looking at our discs more specifically. If you joined us last week, then you have a good overview of the spine because we talked about the anatomy or the structure of the spine. We talked about the different curves of the spine and why we have them, the articulations of the spine, and the movement available in each region. If you didn't listen to the episode, I would highly recommend and encourage you to go back and listen at some point so you get a complete overview of the spine, and it will help you to better understand today's episode as well. When I first decided to take on these deep dives, I knew the spine had to be one of the first regions we looked at because I believe your spine is your lifeline. Now, I know that may sound extreme, and that's not to be fear-mongering about spine health. Believe me, I'll be the first one to tell you to not panic or overly stress about your spine right off the bat. Of course, if you have something like a sharp pain or an acute pain or a chronic pain, yes, you do need to be concerned about it, and we need to give it attention. But from my experience, there's no need to immediately go into extreme elimination of all movement of your spine, because what you're going to discover as we go further into the episode is that you can have a spine condition show up at any point in your life, but still be able to live your life without restriction. And you may have to make some adjustments along the way you move or the way you train your body. And initially, you may need to have some rest and recovery time, a visit to the doctor to get assessed and get some imaging done, which is always a good idea. But I want to remind you that one of my biggest goals on this whole show is to provide you with evidence that your body is so capable of so much more than you know, and healing being one of those. This episode is intended to empower you and to let you know that there is a solution to whatever it is that you are experiencing in your body, specifically in your spine and with your discs today. Because your body's natural state is to survive and thrive, it will do whatever it can to stay active and maintain life. So keep that in mind as we talk today. Going back to this idea of your spine is your lifeline, if you think about it from a practical perspective, your spine serves as the highway for dozens of your nerves to branch out from. And if you've ever had a back injury or chronic pain in your back, then you know how uncomfortable and debilitating it can be. I also know this from my own personal experience with chronic lower back pain in my 20s. Although I was so young and I was dancing all the time, I really didn't think it was a problem or think much of it. That was just a normal way of life for me. But as well as being someone who has had the privilege of working with people in a wide variety, is that some of these clients I had were recovering from specific spine or back injuries. Some would come to me post-rehab from physical therapists or directly from a physician. And in general, I've worked with and still work with an older population of people well into their 60s, 70s, and 80s. What I'm telling you is that most of these people would come to me when they were in pain, and I'm so glad they were seeking a more natural and sustainable solution. But I will tell you this, age doesn't matter. Your spine health is something you can address right now, and honestly, should address right now. We need to start shifting from this reactive state of helping our bodies to more of a preventative state and not wait until a condition arises to force us into making changes. I can't tell you the amount of people I've worked with who have said to me, oh, I wish I would have started moving my body like this sooner, or I wish someone had told me how to do this sooner. So with that, we're going to move into the bulk of today's episode where we're going to cover all things disc health related. And we're going to start with, first of all, just as an overview, what is a disc? What does it do for us in our body? And why should we care about them? Then we're going to look at specifically disc health and conditions that can arise. And today I'm going to be looking at two specifically, which are bulging discs and herniations. Then lastly, we're going to go into how we can support the health of our discs and our spine through movement and through hydration. You may have a general overview of what a disc is, but I'm going to go into it more specifically for you. So the discs that we have heard of in our spine, they're technically called intervertebral discs because anatomically, if you were to look at a photo of your spine, you would see that these discs sit between each vertebral body, which is the thicker, more anterior or front side portion of the vertebrae. Their role in our body is to serve as cushioning for our vertebrae. They're the natural shock absorbing mechanism within our spine, which prevent the vertebrae from grinding or rubbing or compressing together so we aren't bone on bone. They also provide the necessary space between our vertebrae for our nerves to branch out from our spine. The design of these discs is really what allows us to distribute forces throughout the spine. That means carrying heavy objects or moving them around so that one vertebrae doesn't take all the weight, which is a really cool feature because it reduces our risk of injury or premature degeneration of the discs. And although you may think that our bones are what create the majority of strength and stability to the spine, it's actually our discs. And here's what makes those discs so strong and flexible and resilient. Now, when you think about your disc, I want you to visualize it as the shape of a jelly donut, but it's got a much harder outer exterior layer. So maybe you could think of it more like a circular oyster, like a very well-balanced oyster. But regardless, something with a hard outer shell and a jelly or a fluid-like filling, whatever works for you, inside. Now, this harder outer layer is called your annulus fibrosus, and it's made up of fibrous connective tissue, which is mostly composed of type 1 and 2 collagen. So it's very thick and tough, and its main role is to protect the inner jelly of your disc from coming out. The jelly part, or the inner filling of your disc or your donut, is called the nucleus pulpus, and it's made of mostly water, about 66 to 86%, with the remainder of it also being collagen. What's so interesting, as I mentioned earlier, your discs provide the majority of the strength and flexibility to the spine. But even more specifically, that strength and flexibility comes from the inner jelly fluid filling of your disc. Let me give you a quick example of how this works and why we need to start caring about our spine and our disc health now. When you move your body or spine, even in the simplest ways, the jelly inside of the disc moves around and responds to the load or the force that's being placed onto the spine. And when I say load or force, what I mean is if it's something's pushing against you, whether that be gravity or you're moving weight around or it's on your shoulders or maybe resistance from a band could be coming from a variety of directions. When all of our discs are healthy and they're working together as they're naturally designed to do, they keep us moving safely and effectively because without us even thinking about it, they evenly distribute the forces and loads throughout your spine to help prevent too much wear and tear on any one vertebrae or disc. So you can see these discs are pretty important and we need to take care of them. I'm not saying though we have to be so careful all the time and have perfect form with everything we do and to not move our bodies because our spine in general is innately very strong and very resilient. But what usually happens in our modern day lives is that we're not required to use our bodies as much. So what happens is we aren't keeping our spines as naturally strong as they once were, and we're not really thinking about our bodies as much. So our own connection to our body has diminished over time. And here's an interesting fact that backs this up that I came across in an article I was reading while I was researching for this podcast. And in general, it's stated that the highest percentage of back pain, and they were looking at acute, which means sharp, non-specific lower back pain, came from the majority of developed countries, and the United States being number one at 59%. They looked at 1,000 participants who they surveyed who also had acute non-specific lower back pain, and they found that 59% of this 1,000 people were experiencing these lower back acute symptoms. And this is actually the leading cause of disability worldwide. They found in the study as well that most of these people who did report or experience this pain were people who were assuming a static posture, means they were not moving, because they were sitting in front of a computer for work or they were doing a job that did not require them to move as much. And I'm telling you this because they very much specifically in this study listed the different types of positions that these people would be in. Conversely, though, what's interesting is that the second cause of this back pain was from physical labor, but they were doing a repetitive motion, either leaning or bending multiple times a day, maybe with weight, that would also lead to these back issues. And I want to mention both of these scenarios because we think, okay, I shouldn't be sitting all day, but also we don't need to be active all day either. We want a blend of both into our lives. So whether it's your job or your lifestyle that's physically demanding or not, the important piece to remember here is that when we aren't doing our occupations and our jobs that require us to be in certain positions or do certain movements, we need to be intentional about how we're training our bodies and not just slinging weights around and always moving in one plane of motion. I can use myself for example. When I experience any sort of back ache or pain, it's usually when I travel and when I've been sitting for a long period of time, because I'm personally not used to doing that. In my own job, I sit for a while, I get up, I move, I experiment with exercises, I teach. So I know what I need to do to take care of my own body. So where I'm going with all this is that there are a variety of reasons that you might experience some disc health conditions down the road or even some back pain down the road. Most importantly though, what I want you to know is that there is a solution to this, and it is movement. It's also other factors as well, but today we're gonna really talk about movement, and that a little bit of intentional movement and consistency really goes a long way here. All right, now let's move into disc health factors and what are the most common disc conditions that can develop or happen. Now, I'm going to say the term here that is very medical and textbook that I'm not a huge fan of, but you will hear it, and it's called disc degeneration. I personally don't love this term because it sounds so negative. And I think we hear the word degeneration and we think of aging. And in this culture, we've really been taught to view aging as a bad thing. But the hard truth is, it's happening to all of us all the time. I'm sorry, that's really just the reality of it. But we don't have to age, quote unquote, as we've been taught. Aging is not a bad thing. Instead, when we talk about our spine or our disc health and aging, we can absolutely delay the effects by implementing practices that are generative to the spine and to our body, no matter your age. However, when a disc condition does come up, it means that our discs are no longer in their natural state of being. And what I mean is maybe they aren't as hydrated or completely filled with their jelly, like the donut we talked about, and we lose some of these shock absorbing benefits. So a couple things here I want to normalize and tell you the facts on. And first of all, your discs will also begin to lose fluid throughout your lifespan. It's just what happens. Even if you've never had an injury or anything severe happen at some point, this is going to be the natural progression of our body. So it's not something to become fearful of at all. But we do have to talk about, in some instances, when a disc condition arises, because it's fairly common. And it can happen from a variety of reasons. It could be a traumatic accident, like a car accident. And for some people, it may happen from an accumulation of wear and tear over time, either from a repetitive motion, from overtraining, from not being, you know, ready to support a lot of weight on the spine or impact. But again, it can be genetic and it can come from the natural aging process. When any of this happens, it will compromise your disc health. And if you do have discs that are not fully hydrated, in some instances, you may start to feel twinges of pain here and there. It could be acute, meaning sharp, or it could be chronic and develop and be a long-term issue, especially if nothing is ever done to support your spine. You can also experience some referral nerve pain down into a limb, like your arm or your leg. And there could be numbness or weakness in different areas of your body or in a different muscle. And that means that the disc condition is starting to affect the nerves. It's compressing a nerve. Over time, what can happen if these symptoms aren't addressed? It will lead to shifts in our alignment and our postural patterns or limit our movements because we may be consciously trying to shift our body out of pain, or our body is unconsciously making these adjustments for us. I see it all the time and it happens to me too. That being said, there is a tendency for most people to sort of overcompensate or dramatize anything that's happening in the spine. But if you listened to last week's episode, you may remember me saying that if you were to image my spine, and I'm someone that does not experience any sort of acute chronic pain, but if you were to image my spine with an x-ray or an MRI, I would most likely have something imperfect show up that's not ideal. But the thing is, I'm asymptomatic, and that's also very common. To back this up further, I was reading another study, and it was a systematic review of spine imaging findings from individuals ranging from their 20s to their 80s. And what they found in this systematic review is that 3,100 of these individuals showed signs of some sort of disc degeneration, but were asymptomatic, meaning they had no symptoms at all, which I think is really cool and a really great thing to point out, because oftentimes if we've got an issue with our shoulder or elbow or our hip, we don't really think that much of it because we're like, okay, it'll be fine. It'll heal on its own. But a lot of times when it comes to the spine, we make really big changes to our daily lives, which counterintuitively could make our spinal conditions worse. So while we can't change these spinal conditions, like there is no actual cure for them, what we can do is implement generative practices into our lives that can slow this process, that can help us become asymptomatic and still live our lives without restriction. But again, because spine or disc health conditions may pop up for you, maybe you're experiencing that right now and you're wondering what I should do about them, we're gonna dive into that right at this moment. And we're going to look at two of the most common disc conditions, the first one being a bulging disc and the second being a herniated disc, which can also sometimes be called a prolapse or a slip disc or a ruptured disc. A bulging disc is where the circumference or the outer edge of the disc extends beyond the vertebral bodies or its normal boundaries. So basically you can imagine that you have your jelly donut between your hands and without much pressure, it's holding its own shape. It's this normal rounded shape. But the moment you start to place more pressure onto the donut between your two hands, this excess pressure will influence the shape of the disc and it will start to flatten a little bit and become more tensioned. And it may start to bulge outward. Sometimes it will bulge evenly all around the circumference or the perimeter of the donut, or sometimes it will only bulge in one direction, depending on where the force, the resistance, or the pressure is coming from. The thing with a bulging disc is that the outer layer of your donut, or the disc in general, is not damaged. The inner fluid is still within the disc, and that's a good thing. And depending on the severity of the bulging disc and where it's located, it can sometimes affect the surrounding nerves and cause referral pain down into the arms or the legs, or cause temporary numbness or weakness into a muscle. That can specifically happen when the condition first occurs or arises. You may experience a sharp or acute pain when you go to do certain movements. That is a sign where you want to rest and let that inflammation of the disc reduce before you do much of anything physically. That can take anywhere from a couple of days to a couple of weeks to reduce. But the good news is that typically after this period of rest, the pain will subside and eventually diminish. In very rare cases, surgery would be required, but more often than not, it isn't. What you can do for a bulging disc to become asymptomatic and to live with that and it doesn't affect your life is you're definitely going to want to go to a doctor, get some imaging. You're going to want to go to physical therapy. And then after you've been released from physical therapy, you're going to want to maintain a practice of movement and physical training that's going to support your spine and your body, which we're going to talk about a little bit later in the episode. The second disc condition we're going to look at is a herniation, which again can also be called a ruptured or a prolapse or a slipped disc, and it's a little bit different than a bulge. A herniation is where the outer lining of the disc or the shell of your jelly donut is damaged and the inner fluid or jelly filling starts to leak out. This can occur in different areas of your spine, but most commonly it happens at L4, L5, which is the juncture of your lumbar vertebrae number 4 and number 5, or at L5 and S1, which is your lumbar vertebrae 5 and your first sacral vertebrae. This can also cause acute pain, especially when it first occurs, and can also affect a nerve and create that numbness or weakness and referral pain into various areas of your body if it does affect a nerve. And just like a bulge, the herniation can be caused by traumatic accidents, an accumulation of intense loading of the spine when it's not properly prepared or in a safe position. But more often than not, it's a condition that happens as we age because as we get older, the fluid or the jelly inside of our discs does become less hydrated and weakens. And just like a bulging disc, the acute pain and the symptoms that come with the herniations can be reduced over time. At first, again, you will need to let the area rest, allow the inflammation to come down, and in some rare cases, surgery may be needed for this. While neither disc condition can be cured unless you do have surgery, I do want to remind you, you can live with these conditions and be pain-free and asymptomatic for a very, very long period of time. So again, if this is something that you are experiencing right now or it's happened in your past and you're still having residual effects from it, in this next portion of the podcast, we're going to be talking specifically about what we can do to support the health of our discs, to maintain disc health. And if you are experiencing any of these symptoms, what the steps are that you can take to support your own healing process. So moving on to my favorite part of every episode, the practical application and the solution in a way that's going to work for you and how you can apply it into your own body. So what I'm about to say here goes for any of the disc conditions we just talked about, a bulging disc or a herniated disc, but also are good practices for anyone who in general wants to increase the health of their spine, start to focus on the health of their spine, and who wants to implement these practices into their training routine very simply. To start us off, most simply is hydration, literally water intake. Remember when I said that the inner filling of your discs is mostly water, 66 to 86%. Your water intake directly influences the health of your discs. One of the simplest ways you can support the health of your spine and your discs is making sure you're drinking water throughout the day. Because as you sleep, your spine rehydrates, or the discs rehydrate overnight. In the morning, they are full, they are juicy, and you are the tallest you're gonna be for the whole day. And as the day progresses, by the evening, you're going to have lost a little bit of height through your body. And some of that fluid has come out of the discs. And then when you wake up in the morning, you are back to the height that you were. But this is also why we naturally start to get shorter as we age, because naturally our discs take in less water and they weaken and get a little harder over time. So drink your water. It's the simplest way to start supporting the health of your discs. Second is going to be movement. You knew I was going to say that, right? I want to say this too really quickly. If you are experiencing acute pain from either of these conditions we talked about, the bulging disc or the herniated disc, or just in general, step one is going to be go get assessed by a health professional, a doctor, get your x-rays, your MRIs, whatever is recommended, and go from there. You always want to get the answers before you start reacting to the symptoms. And I say this to clients all the time. We don't need to be playing a guessing game here. We have all this information and technology available to us, and all of these experts in their field, go use them. Plus, when you're playing the guessing game and you're just wondering, do I have this going on? Do I have that going on? It's going to delay your healing. So the more information we can gather at the beginning, the better. So once you have that initially and whatever recommendations they make, maybe they're going to tell you just to rest for a little bit and the inflammation is going to go down. Maybe they're going to recommend you go to a physical therapist for an assessment and some initial sessions as recommended. Do that. Then here's the most important part. Once you are out of your acute pain, once you've made some progress, you want to continue moving your body, moving your spine, supporting yourself. And that's going to be with finding a consistent program that includes work to support you through things like breathing, breathing mechanics and breath work, focusing on alignment, not just of your spine, but of your whole entire body in a global sense. You want someone that's going to safely incorporate postural rebalancing exercises, mobility work, teaching you how to move at your joints, and safely and effectively starting to load you with weight. Maybe it starts with body weight, then it progresses into light resistance, and then maybe you're working towards some light strength training and so on. When you first get back to moving again, after a condition like this happens, you're most likely going to be doing a lot of exercises that keep your spine fairly still or fairly neutral to develop stability surrounding the spine and the discs, and to really focus on using your inner unit of support. Remember that inner unit really comes from our breathing. So it's going to come from using the diaphragm, the pelvic floor, the multifidi, and the transverse abdominis. This is what I always teach people very first, especially when they're healing from a spinal condition. We want to get these inner layers, this inner unit functioning and back to its normal supportive state as soon as possible. Once that's been established, then we want to start slowly and progressively restoring movement to the spine with strengthening work, with mobility work. Now, this timeline will look different for each person. There's going to be no fixed timeline. Everyone is very unique in how they experience exercises and how they start to heal. But with bulges or herniations, you can absolutely restore all movements of your spine. I've seen it many, many times with clients. It is also extremely important that you're working with an instructor who is doing more than just telling you the exercises to do, but they're really teaching you about your body. So for example, I had a client when she first came to me was not moving her spine at all. That's what was recommended to her. And this is very common. After we had worked together for a while, I have had a client, I'm thinking of one woman specifically who I worked with, and she could do all movements of her spine, no problem. But when it came to one specific exercise, and it was doing a bridge, but it was doing a bridge with spinal articulation. If you're aware, you can do a bridge in two different ways. One is with spinal articulation or segmentation, rolling up and rolling down through your spine. And the other way is keeping your spine neutral or not moving it and just moving from the hips, doing a hip hinging movement. Now, even after years of working with this woman, she still was not comfortable doing that articulating bridge exercise because it was putting too much force or flexion into her spine, which was aggravating one of her discs. And she had a herniated disc. However, she was also the same person who could completely flex her spine from a standing position, even with some weight in her hand. She could do a roll down and roll up off the mat, no problem, no issues with her spine. But for her, it did not feel safe or comfortable to articulate through her spine in that bridge. So again, this is not a one-size-fits-all method. It's really taking time to learn about your body and what works for you. And she knew this. So if I ever had her in a class and I told everyone to do an articulating spinal bridge, she already automatically knew that she didn't have to do that, that she was gonna choose the type or the variation of the exercise that was going to work best for her. Your program as well needs to include strengthening work. So strengthening the deep muscles of the spine, which does start with that breathing again. It starts with the inner unit. And we want to progress into being able to move our spine in all planes of motion, flexion, extension, lateral flexion, side to side movement, and rotation and combinations of all of these. Now remember, the degree in which you move your spine is going to be different than somebody else. But after that, you also want to start adding in some strengthening work with outside loads or forces, whether that's a resistance band or light weights, progressing you from body weight. This is one of the reasons why I started the Supple Spine series on Modern Body, where I teach a specific plan or way to walk you through learning about your spine and the different movements available in each segment and progress you into larger, more complex movements that combine many planes of motion all in one, start to add in load and resistance. So it really is a strategic way to progress you and to help you understand how your spine works, moves, and functions. And what's really cool is that you can also take, in general, a Pilates class, because Pilates inherently does support the spine. However, I always say this because in my own personal experience, I'm a Pilates instructor who has been trained in a contemporary method of Pilates. Now, if you know anything about Pilates and you know that Joseph Pilates, one of his main areas of focus was the health of the spine, but he believed or thought at the time, because this was many years ago, that your spine was supposed to be totally straight up and down, no curves at all. So I'm not really sure if the classical method still follows that guideline. I'm thinking they don't. But I don't know how a classical Pilates instructor would approach a spine condition, but I do know that a contemporary Pilates instructor would approach it very differently, because often the contemporary approach, especially the one that I'm trained in, literally took the exercises from Joseph Pilates' original method and worked with a physiotherapist or physical therapist to update the exercises to reflect the current research and understandings of what we know about spine and spine health today. So a lot of times I've had clients in the past who have come to me, maybe from physical therapy, and my first few sessions with them are pretty slow and we're testing things out and seeing how they're doing. And they would say to me, "This feels a lot like physical therapy, but your explanations are a lot more thorough and I'm getting a lot more out of it." And that's because of the shift in these progressions of each exercise and the lens in which they are presented, especially for individuals with spinal conditions. So if you are experiencing anything that's really severe, I would recommend you go and find somebody either virtually to work with. I work with people virtually on all sorts of things, from disc herniations to shoulder issues. It doesn't really matter. Or you can do it in person too. And what's really cool as well is that a lot of physical therapists and doctors, even chiropractors, are recommending people go and do Pilates for the spinal and disc health benefits. And I will tell you this, with all the years that I've been doing Pilates or teaching Pilates, I will tell you that 10 out of 10, the clients I work with who had disc conditions like a bulge or herniation got better. And I will never forget this. One of my very first few months of teaching in a studio in person, I had this husband and wife couple come in, and they both had back issues, spinal conditions. One had a herniation and one had a bulge. And I was so terrified of hurting them, but I kept it really safe. I did really basic exercises. I was super careful with them. And no joke, in three sessions, they came to me and said that their pain was gone. Like, they woke up and their back wasn't hurting. I mean, I knew what I was doing, but I also just couldn't believe how powerful this work was and the results that they were gaining from this really simple work they were doing. And this is why I say a little goes a long way. Consistency is going to be your best friend, and it's going to take time. But let me tell you, these people, this was probably 8 years ago or 7 years ago, they're still doing Pilates today, 2 times a week, because they know it's what's keeping them supported in their body and they're able to do everything they want in their life without restriction. And if something does come up in their spine, they know what to do to alleviate it. They know the steps they can take. They know the solution. So they're not immediately going towards the doctor all the time. They're not going to, you know, get their medication all the time. They are feeling comfortable, but they know how to take care of themselves, which I think is so, so important to remind ourselves, is that we really can take care of ourselves. Yes, we need support from professionals, health professionals, movement professionals, but we really need to learn about our own bodies too. Now, the last thing we're going to talk about, point three, in supporting your discs is the collagen promotion. So as I said earlier as well, along with your water intake, your hydration, which is what most of your disc is made up of, it's also made up of type 1 and type 2 collagen. And here is where I want to help you decipher a truth from a trend, and it's about collagen. A lot of us are hearing, reading that we need to be taking collagen supplements to help with this. And nothing against supplements. I mean, maybe a little bit. I'm not someone that goes right into supplementation, so I am a little bit biased, but the supplements may help. I'm not saying they're not going to help. But what I will tell you is that the most impactful way to promote collagen production, to promote stimulation of the collagen production in your body, is through movement. So what that means is that we are needing to place impact onto our bodies, either from the ground or from some other direction. And we can do things like walking, hiking, maybe you're jogging, maybe you're running, maybe you're doing some jumping, hopping, bouncing, whatever it is that's appropriate for you. Because again, the most effective method for promoting and improving collagen production throughout your body is through motion. Let's now recap a little bit, because we did talk a lot today about our discs. And first we looked at what is a disc. And remember, your disc is cushioning for your spine. That's really what it does for us in your body. And let's go back to that image of a jelly donut. So we have a jelly donut with a harder outer layer. Maybe it's a little stale. And it's got the fluid or jelly inside, and we want to keep it contained. And what's really important about our discs is that they help bring strength and resiliency to our spine. They are the shock absorbing mechanism on our spine, and they help to reduce wear and tear on any one specific vertebrae, and they help us move safely and effectively. Then we talked about the bulging discs and the herniations and what you could do about each one. So if you do experience one of these conditions, number one, do go see a healthcare professional or provider and get your assessment, get your imaging. Then after you've done that, maybe you do physical therapy, continue to work into a program like we do on Modern Body with Supple Spine or Pilates classes that is going to help you continue that healing process and bring these regenerative practices to your spine rather than be reactive of it. And I also just want to mention too that any of these issues, conditions can arise in your spine naturally, but you can be asymptomatic as long as you take these steps and start moving toward that solution of how can I help my body to thrive and seek health just like it wants to. Then we looked at what we can do to support the health of our discs and our spine, and that was movement. Then hydration, which literally meant water intake, and also movement to help promote that collagen production. Then we looked at the practical application of what can we do to support the health of our discs and ultimately our spine. First, we looked at hydration, literally taking in water throughout the day to help hydrate those discs. That inner fluid filling is mainly water and collagen. We did talk about collagen and how we can promote collagen production. And that is, again, through movement, through motion, especially when our bodies have to have impact from the ground. So walking, hiking, jogging, we do some bouncing on Modern Body. We do some like heel lifts and drops. Anything like that will help with collagen production. Then the last one was movement and a program that is progressively and safely and effectively training you to support the health of your disc. So we're looking at joint mobility, we're looking at breathing mechanics, alignment, postural rebalancing exercises. These are all the things that I teach and talk about inside of Modern Body, and that's why so many of our members are experiencing so much ease and joy and strength and freedom in their body, not just in classes, but in every single area of their life. Thank you so much for joining me today for part two of our mini series of the spine, our deep dive. Next week, we will have part three, so stay tuned for that. I hope you were able to gain a small tidbit of information. I mean, there was a lot of information in that episode, so I hope it wasn't overwhelming. And I really hope that you do join us next week so you can keep learning about your spine and being your own advocate and moving toward those generative practices. Thank you again so much for listening. If you did enjoy this podcast, it would be so wonderful if you took 1 minute to leave a rating and or a review to help our podcast grow. You can also find out more about Modern Body at modernbody.io, or you can go over to Instagram and find me there too, at Ali Jaroma. Drop me a message and I would love to hear from you. Okay, until next week, thanks again. Bye.